I'm John Krall. Coming up on No Limits, we kick off this year's Indie Talks, a series of events designed to create a community-wide dialogue about things that matter to and interest us all. Today, we'll start that conversation by talking about the issue of livability, about whether Indianapolis is a super city, and if not, what it will take to get there. We'll talk with community leaders Tamara Zahn, Mark Miles, and Jerry Bepko, and of course, you. You can join the discussion by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or emailing a question to nolimits@wfyi.org. You also can send questions or comments via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Please do join this kickoff for the community conversation that is Indy Talks and talk with us about livability in Indianapolis. But first, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today, kicking off Indy Talks, which is a community-wide conversation about the things that matter to us here in Indianapolis. We're talking today about livability in the city, and we are fortunate to have as our guests Mark Miles, president and CEO, Central Indiana Corporate Partnership, and Super Bowl 2012 host committee chairman. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
Good to have you here. Tamara Zahn, who is the president of Indianapolis Downtown Incorporated. Tamara, good to have you here.
Thank you for joining us.
And calling in by phone is Dr. Jerry Bepko, Chancellor Emeritus of IUPUI. Dr. Bepko, how are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us. I'd like to start talking, since the subject today is livability, and that is one of those things that it's a word that has a very elastic definition. People mean different things when they talk about it. I'd like to start a little bit, and I think I'll start with Tamara on this one. How do you define livability when we're talking about a community?
Well, I don't think we have a Indianapolis definition that we've all embraced. It's a personal definition, but interestingly, a couple of months ago, we hosted in Indianapolis a CEO for Cities workshop, mm-hmm. a livability workshop, and their definition was imagine a city that had access, where the citizens had access to art, nature, beauty, and good design every single day. And I thought that was an interesting definition.
So it's more an aesthetic one, would we say, or are there other definitions that could be out there?
Oh, I would say that was not only aesthetic, but quality of life.
Mm-hmm. Mark Miles, what's your definition of livability for a community?
I think of it without any precision as a place where that attracts people, a place where people want to live, and there isn't any one answer to what that means. There's many different points of view, perhaps, as there are prospective residents. But I think of it more broadly than the aesthetic, but certainly to include the aesthetic. Cost of living matters, crime matters, convenience matters, and all those things weigh in along with the cultural offerings and the other things in the community. I'm sure we'll get to other things like education differently to different folks. But it's in the end, to me, it's whether or not your place is a place people want to gravitate toward as opposed to find an alternative to.
And Dr. Bepko, we'll complete the circle here. What's your definition of livability?
Well, I have two definitions, really, one of them is personal. I moved to Indianapolis now 38 years ago, and we had little children. And when we arrived, we weren't sure that we would want to stay. We were used to living either in Chicago or New York, and we thought that Indianapolis would be less interesting than those other cities. Quickly, we learned what a hospitable place Indianapolis is for families, for people with young children especially. And it's not just a matter of having a great children's museum or having kind of a family culture in the community. It's a matter of commuting issues. It's a matter of how work and family can be combined in Indianapolis, where it's more difficult to do that in other cities. I have a daughter who lives in Manhattan in New York. They have two small children. They both are lawyers in big law firms, and their lives are filled with racing from one place to another. with nannies. They live in a place in a neighborhood that's called Nannyville because everybody has a nanny, and it makes life very complicated. I don't mean to suggest that only one partner in a marriage should work either. This is a time when I think we'll see most families with two people earning, but it is a matter of having things that are available to you easily and quickly, and having a general pattern of life that's more hospitable to raising children. I know several young people who moved to Indianapolis in recent years, and they were coming home in one sense, but they said that the real reason for coming back to Indianapolis was that they had young children, and life was very difficult for them in Chicago, a city I know a lot about. I grew up there, and I can understand why they would say that. The second part of livability to me is education, and Mark mentioned that. We'll probably talk more about that, but I think that livability means education on the front end. If you have a good educational system, most everything is better. When young people start going to school, if the educational system is such that it engages the students and creates good learning environments for them, I think that improves life in general. It makes life livable for people who have children, much more livable. And it carries all the way through to the most advanced education that people can have, and that prepares them for taking a more and more responsible employment. It also gives them knowledge and the ability to think at the most advanced levels in many fields that will result in creating new businesses, new services, new opportunities for people. And that translates to me into livability.
I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, or you can send us an email at nolimits, that's one word, at WFYI.org, or questions or comments at WFYI. And actually, we've had someone who's taken us up on that invitation. We're going to pull him into the conversation right now. Robert, I understand you're calling from downtown Indy?
Yeah. I've realized that we dodged the bullet on making a mega structure in the White Rivers Park project when it was coming up with the new zoo and all that. We don't have any mega structure tower. And that gave us the money that we should have been using to create what will be, an excellent transportation system. I noticed that that's one of the things that makes Detroit such a great area for getting around, why it became such a good, large city. And I noticed it about Los Angeles, San Diego, and L.A., and in Washington, D.C., that area also has a good transportation structure so that you don't get big holes of, I guess it would be, non-commerce. That's one of the things that makes the livability of Indianapolis possible.
Okay.
To get our bus system or whatever, we're going to end up with the light rail going, it'd be the big step forward towards, well, actually the step away from getting behind on the basis as far as our city status goes.
Okay. All right. Robert, thank you for the call. That question of public transportation is one actually we've dealt with in this program before, and that's one of those areas. Some of what we've talked about so far is not quantifiable, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But that's one of the areas where, you know, when you measure it, creating options, whether you want to have a car or not have a car and still be able to access the services the city has, is an important one. How important do you think that public transportation is to this mix of livability? I'll go with Mark Miles first on that one, just because he made the mistake of making eye contact with me at the wrong moment.
Well, it's for me one of the top three factors and essential developments in the ongoing improvement of our community from my perspective, and it's something.
Just out of curiosity, what are the other two?
K-12 education and livable, interesting neighborhoods.
Okay.
Especially our most urban neighborhoods.
Okay. Why is public transportation so important. I interrupted you on that, and I wanted to bring us back.
Yeah,
so.
No worries. At all different levels, it matters. It matters to people who don't have a choice. And I think there's almost a moral issue right now in terms of the lack of funding of our bus system and the way that it doesn't work adequately. It matters in terms of, as you said, John, given people who have cars and have options for getting around. It matters hugely, I think, potentially in terms of the reinvestment of our core city, by which I don't mean only downtown. I mean what we used to think of the city many years ago. It helps the further development of our most interesting neighborhoods. It matters to individuals more broadly than we can know today as carbon fuels become more expensive and more problematic. And related to that, it matters environmentally. So on all kinds of levels, it matters. And in another sense, and this is the one that we have a hard time putting a dollar value on, I think especially for young people who are the kind of people we got to have in this city, who have choices about where they live and work, it's just going to be a prerequisite.
Tamara Zahn, you are nodding your head emphatically here. Do you want to join the conversation?
Yeah, I think I would just add to the conversation that we know that in order to keep growing as a community, we have to have a better way of connecting. And adding to the list that Mark ticked off, I would add economic development. We know that conventions and businesses, when they're looking at Indianapolis, public transportation and getting their employees to and from their work or to their meetings is a very, very important part of the equation.
Dr. Bepko, your thoughts on public transportation.
I agree with everything they've said. I was nodding, too, only you couldn't see me.
Well, yeah, it's a little hard over the phone line.
I think there are issues of energy consumption, economic development, and I think making life livable and attractive, all are involved in and produced by having a better public transportation system. I'm very encouraged by what's going on right now. I know Mark and Tamara are both involved in that, but it seems to me this is a crucial moment for Indianapolis. It's not a good time because there's not as much money available to provide public investment, but it's a crucial moment because I think everything is aligned from what I read. It seems to me that we have a wonderful opportunity right now to establish the conception of a metropolitan regional transportation system and start to lay down some of the ground rules, how that could be developed, and start to make the investments that are needed. I agree it's a scandal in a way that people can't take better bus service, have better bus service, even in the heavily traveled routes, the bus service isn't very good. I was, for a variety of reasons, unable to drive for about 2 months some years ago, and I took the bus from where we live on the north side of Indianapolis, around 86th and Ditch, downtown every day and home every night for several weeks, and it takes forever, and it is not a very good system. People have to rely on that. I was only doing it on a temporary basis, but people have to rely on that over a long period of time would be greatly disadvantaged in the work environment, and their businesses wouldn't be as successful.
Mark Miles, do you think this is the moment?
I just want to comment on Jerry's notion about the moment very quickly. I do. My sense is that there is a growing and substantial consensus around this need. The hard part is what can we afford? How do you sequence it? How do you start? And a lot of work is going into that, and I believe that...
Well, and who all do you include? A lot of other questions involved.
That's right, but my point is simply that I believe the consensus is there if we can figure out how to manage the proponents.
We're talking about the issue of livability here in Indianapolis, and we're fortunate to have as our guest Mark Miles, President and CEO, Central Indiana Corporate Partnership, and the Super Bowl 2012 Host Committee Chair. Tamara Zahn, who is the president of Indianapolis Downtown Incorporated, and Dr. Jerry Bepko, Chancellor Emeritus of IUPUI. We're also taking your calls at 1-866-476-3881 and your emails at nolimits@wfyi.org. We're going to continue this conversation. Please do join us. Please stay with us. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We're talking today about livability. We're kicking off the Indy Talks series for 2011. We're fortunate to have as our guest today Mark Miles, president and CEO, Central Indiana Corporate Partnership. He also has the duty of being the committee host committee chairman for Super Bowl 2012. Tamara Zahn, who is the president of Indianapolis Downtown Incorporated, and talking with us by phone is Dr. Jerry Bepko, Chancellor Emeritus of IUPUI. We were talking at right before the break about public transportation, how this might be a moment that could be seized. Do you all agree that is one of the big challenges confronting Indianapolis right now in terms of making it a livable city? What are the, I know Mark said K-12 education and basically neighborhood development and enhancement to some degree and highlighting the good things that are going on in neighborhoods. Tamara, what are your other big challenges in terms of making Indianapolis a more livable city?
Well, I think those are probably the big three. There's a lot of subsets under those, but a fun thing that still connects with the mass transit is just how much more walkable and bikeable we as a community are becoming and our residents want us to become. And that enhances the neighborhoods as well as gives the options that you mentioned of how people get around. And I think that's just with the new cultural trail coming on, I think it enhances the quality of life significantly.
Dr. Bepko, what do you think are the other big challenges?
I'd like to add to what Tamara that just said, too. It keeps people healthier because exercise is clearly correlated with good health. And the more people walk and ride bikes and take care of their transportation needs by using their own energy, the better off they'll be. I'd go back to education. There are so many subsets to that. It seems to me that if you have an enlightened population, a well-educated population, people who can think clearly about the most complicated matters, people who can think without emotion about how to make things better, I think those communities will be not only more livable because they'll be more pleasant in general to live in, but they'll be more successful in the commerce that they have and in the way they define quality of life and the arts and their cultural activities, and that all contributes to livability.
We are talking about livability on No Limits, and we'd like to invite you to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You also can send comments or questions via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten a tweet from the Dead Unicorns Performance Group. They ask, are we a super city because of our performing arts? There are flash mobs now here. Tamara Zahn, you're nodding your head. You made Mark Miles' mistake from the last segment, made eye contact at the wrong moment. Are we a super city because of the arts?
Well, I think we have a tremendous selection and offering and quality of arts here. I think, in fact, the Palladium, Carmel's new performing arts center, which will be opening in the next couple of weeks, will continue to take Central Indiana up another notch. So I think we have, you know, the unique thing about Indianapolis is we always say we have big city assets in a mid-sized city, and that's a luxury and a really good thing. Flash mobs is fun. It's a growing trend. They're more of a spontaneous way of expression that adds another element of fun and surprise and smile that's just current. It's temporary.
We've also gotten an email from Keith Cruz who says, and I'll just read it. I think it's probably easiest to get the gist of it. Growing up in Florida and having an overabundance of fresh water to use recreationally, I am always dismayed when I realize that the rivers running through Indianapolis are polluted to the point that there are signs on the banks warning people to stay out of the water due to sewage pollution. Indianapolis is a river city. It would be a tremendous asset to the city if people could swim in the White River. Does the city have any plans to actually use the waterways for anything more than open sewers? Does the city even know that the river is there as a recreational asset? Tamara, do you want to speak to that one, or Tamara's on?
Well, I think Keith is right, is absolutely on point. We are very lucky to have a lot of waterway in Indianapolis, and frankly, I think it hasn't been maximized, both whether you can engage in it or enjoy the banks of the waterways. So I think it's a tremendous opportunity as we continue to think about what kind of a community we want Indianapolis to be in the future.
How big, Mark Miles, how big an effort would it be to clean up those waterways, though?
You know, I don't really know. It's certainly not my expertise. I suspect that it's a problem that starts well north of us, and it requires, beyond all that, the kind of investment that the mayor and others are working to put in place to deal with our stormwater runoff issues. So huge issue. The feds are requiring us to deal with it at one kind of remedial level, and that's work in progress.
Well, let me that raises a larger question in terms of meeting these challenges of livability in front of the community right now. How much of that is within Indianapolis's power or Marion County's power to do by itself, and how much of it requires an awful, as you point out, the rivers start in other places than Indianapolis. Those problems get pulled down to Indianapolis. How much cooperation does it require across, you know, county lines or even state lines in this case?
Well, obviously, it sort of depends on which piece of livability you're talking about. I like to focus on the things that we can control, where we can take control of our own destiny. And I think that Indianapolis has a remarkable history of doing just that. It doesn't follow, absent climate and mountains and oceans and beaches, that we could have created a robust, dynamic downtown. But it happened in our lifetimes. And that was a vision that was born here and basically driven by Indianapolis people. You're talking about broader issues like environmental ones, obviously they're broader. And then there's regional collaboration and cooperation that affects much of what we're trying to do, not the least of which is build our economy.
Yeah, and last year when we kicked off the Indy Talk series with a program here with Richard Longworth, he really made the argument that most of these problems are not just beyond cities, but states to solve. It's going to require a whole new way of looking at public engagement and start thinking about regional challenges rather than state or city ones. Tamara, you are nodding your head. Is that an agreement or just acknowledgement that that's his
argument?
Well,
I think Richard's book about the value of Midwestern, you know, collaboration and what we all need to do as Midwestern states to lead the pack or stay current with the pack, I think was very relevant. And I also thought he brought up a really good point about the role of universities in research, which I think Central Indiana has a wealth of assets. Indiana has a wealth of assets, and how we, and Jerry can speak to this, how do we capitalize on our universities and our education at the higher education level? And particularly, and the research that's going on. So to me, it's a ripe conversation for Indiana.
Well, and as someone who spends some time in a college and university environment myself, I will toss that one to Dr. Bepko. It seemed to me that having read Richard Longworth's book, that his indictment really of academia was that we don't play all that nicely together, that we don't work well together, that there are rivalries, and we don't think of collaborating from one university or college to another. Is that a fair criticism, do you think,
Dr. Beckham? I think so. I think that universities were developed centuries ago as sort of walled cities. They didn't communicate with anything outside their own castle-like structures. They wouldn't even communicate with the people who lived around them. The old town gown controversies, even in Europe, were pretty well developed, and the United States followed that pattern. I think the modern university, however, is much more engaged, and that's by design. It's not easy because if you want faculty members to be especially productive in their own fields, you can't tell them what exactly you want them to do to engage with regional or relevant communities outside the university. But I think more and more you find that universities are defining themselves as engaged. Every university that I know of has a long list of things that you can cite, they can cite to explain their levels of engagement and how much they're contributing to their relevant environments. You know, one thing that universities have discovered is that some of their major assets are land, and in the real estate development business, you know, there are three ways of creating value for measuring value, and that's location, location, location. Mm-hmm. And if they can improve the location of their institutions, they can increase their value geometrically. So you see a lot more of this today than before. I think that if you have good universities, I think we do. I think we have great private independent colleges, including Franklin and others in the right in the region. We also have great public university assets that have been managed, I think, in Indiana as well as they have been anywhere. You have a corridor that I think will become more and more known from Bloomington to Lafayette with Indianapolis in the middle, where we have special opportunities for collaboration and for putting together the kinds of big research that will define the future. You can look at all kinds of examples where this is going on. I think, as a matter of fact, Indiana University Bloomington was just given an award. I don't think it's an award, a classification by one of the national organizations for their engagement. They have an enormous book of examples of engagement where they've been working directly with students, faculty, and institutionally to try to make things better in the relevant communities, maybe not geographically, always geographically, but relevant in some way to the institution. And then you were talking about the river before. I always think about the project that was created by the Center for Earth and Environmental Science at IUPUI with grants from a variety of sources, including the government, federal government. They created this, actually I think it was called the Lily Harbor Lily River Project. Mm-hmm. They recreated along the White River, on the part of the White River that joins the campus, conditions of nature that are precisely what they would have been 200 years before they did it, and would be exactly as the riverfront was in 1800. The same plant life, the same animal life. They tried to recreate it all naturally by using their knowledge of what was there 200 years before, and also some artificial stimulus to make it look the way it was. But it was a very interesting project, and I think if you had more of that sort of thing all up and down the river, you'd make some strides toward improvement. Although I think Mark is right that the real answer is the some of the industrial pollution that still burdens the river and some of the waste that goes into the river. Those things have to be cleaned up institutionally by law or by government action. And I think there is hope that with the new arrangements for the handling of city waste water and water, that there'll be a lot done to clean up the river.
We are talking about livability here on No Limits. Our guests are Mark Miles, President and CEO of the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership, Tamara Zahn, President of Indianapolis Downtown Incorporated, and Dr. Jerry Bepko, Chancellor Emeritus of IUPUI. And I would like to invite all of our listeners to join the conversation, too, by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You also can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We're going to take a call right now. Sharisha, are you with us?
Hi. Yes, I'm here. Hi, how are you?
We're doing well. Thank you. Thank you for joining the program.
Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I just wanted to add, as a native New Yorker, in terms of making Indianapolis a city of livability, I went from having a full-time job as a nurse when I was in New York. I am the parent of a small child, to coming here and becoming a full-time student. By the way, IUPUI is an excellent, excellent school. I love it.
You're allowed to say that. Thank you, attending. Dr.
Bepko. Yes, Dr. Bepko, thank you very much. But in terms of livability, I think it has a lot to do with socioeconomic status. I think that I've been in the car emphatically shaking my head and agreeing with your guest. To make this city more livable, we need more diverse neighborhoods. They need to be stratified socioeconomically, and public transportation is a really big issue. Again, I said I'm a native New Yorker. I found that when I came to Indianapolis, it was much more difficult for me not only to get around, having, you know, no income, from having great income to having no income going back to school, much more difficult to get around. And also, I had challenges with finding quality education for my son. I mean, a lot of the good education in the city is private. And while they do have some grants and scholarships, having no income and having school, college is my full-time job, it's just very difficult to work around and to find something that I think that my child is absolutely worthy of. To have him in a challenging educational environment costs money here. And that's very frustrating for me.
So it sounds like... So
there's my two cents.
All right. Thank you for joining the call, Sharisha.
Thank you very much.
Thank
sir.
You.
Bye-bye.
Basically, it sounds like it's a question of making sure that Indianapolis is livable regardless of your income or means level. What are the challenges in regard to that, Tamara Zahn?
Well, I think access for all is very important, and I think, you know, the continuing growth of options, again, seems to be critical, whether it's charter schools or improving the quality of our public schools. I think it's a very, very important point that she brings up.
Mark Miles, what do we need to do to make sure that Indianapolis is more livable for people who might not have tremendous means?
Well, I think this. I'd like to respond to the question is
sure.
On the subject of K-12 education.
Sure.
It obviously is not the same throughout the entire city. But for me, the starting point is our most intractable social issues, which relate to economics primarily, and that's about the area primarily served by IPS. And we ought to start by recognizing the reality. It's a reason that people leave town, and that has to be changed. And we ought to do two or three more shows about what it takes to change that from an asset for the community that attracts people and families of all different types from what it is today. But today it's a problem.
Yeah, we are actually, the next two shows are going to be about education reform. No Limits programs are. We're talking about the issue of livability here in Indianapolis as part of the Indy Talks series, the kickoff program. Guests are Mark Miles, President and CEO, Central Indiana Corporate Partnership, Tamara Zahn, President, Indianapolis Downtown Incorporated, and Dr. Jerry Bepko, Chancellor Emeritus of IUPUI. Had a very lively conversation so far. I don't see any signs that it's going to slow down, so please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We're talking today as part of the kickoff for Indy Talks, a community-wide conversation about the things that matter to us. We're talking about livability, what it takes to make Indianapolis a pleasant place to live. We're talking with Mark Miles, President and CEO, Central Indiana Corporate Partnership, also gets to be the Super Bowl 2012 Host Committee Chairman. That's an enviable role, I would think. Tamara Zahn, President, Indianapolis Downtown Incorporated, and Dr. Jerry Bepko, Chancellor Emeritus of IUPUI. We were talking really about education and the whole, and I don't want, because we are going to do the next two shows on this to spend a tremendous amount of time on it because we've got 2 hours devoted coming up to it. But real quickly, what would it take to improve education in this city and therefore make the city more attractive to residents?
Well, I think nationally there are reform models which are different, but you can draw out and identify the commonalities between them. Ultimately, I think you have to look at the schools themselves. You have to have strong school leaders. You have to have superb teachers. You have to have the money follow the kids. The whole orientation has to change so that it's about the kid and not about the structure of the district. The caller's situation is just so perfectly describes this, our problem. If you have a lack of means, you don't feel like you have good choices. You have to have money to get the kind of education you want for your kids. To be fair, that's not altogether true. IPS has made a lot of progress in a lot of places, but they tend to be the places where they've found a way to turn the schools loose to do whatever it takes to educate a kid. But we know from great results around the country that all kids, regardless of their demographic background, even regardless to an extent what their family situation is, can be educated, and we got a lot of work to do.
We are getting a lot of tweets and emails now and calls as well. So I would love to hear all of your thoughts on education, but I think we're going to move on real quickly to get to them. One question I think that's pretty simple. Are there any plans to install a citywide wireless internet network? And it's from Ryan Hudek. Tamara, do you know of any?
No plans in the near future.
Okay. All right. And then we have another one from Laura Henderson, who's apparently the executive director of Indy Winter Farmers Market and co-director Growing Places of Indy. Says, I'd love to hear the role of food and food culture included in this conversation. Not only is food important to the health and well-being of our population, but food experiences have incredible power to make a city memorable to visitors. Both of these are important to the potential of any city to be super, and access to good, fresh, healthy food is obviously important to livability. Mark Miles, you are nodding your head.
I am, because my prior appointment this morning was to be part of a media event out on the Near East Side on East 10th Street where the neighborhood opened the Pogues Run Grocery, which is a food co-op, I think perhaps the first of its kind in Indianapolis, in a neighborhood that desperately needs quality food and nutritional options. I think there's a lot going on. I think the emailer's suggestion that it's important to us is spot on. The mayor's, got big plans, I think, for urban gardens. And, again, we could go on a long time about the importance of it. It has to do, as Jerry already introduced in the conversation, with our health. But it also can have to do with commerce and a sense of a cool place, a quality of life.
Yeah, we've gotten a tweet from God Said Ha saying, we need to increase the number of high-paying creative class jobs in Indianapolis. We rely too much on tourism and sports, in my opinion. His opinion, not mine. I don't have one, actually. Mark Miles, do we rely too much on tourism and sports? I would think as the host of the committee chair for the Super Bowl.
So my volunteer job is the Super Bowl. I get paid to work on economic development.
Yeah.
And there are different things in some ways, and they overlap in some. I think the sports scene in town, the sports developments have been very important as employers and very important to a level of enjoyment of living in this community and very important in terms of projecting a happening place around the country and to some extent the world. So it's all good. Probably the coverage of it exaggerates its importance. It is important, but it doesn't take the place of education at IUPUI and our other schools of higher ed and K-12, and it doesn't take the place of continuing to do all the things necessary to build a robust economy, which is always work in progress.
Yeah, we've gotten another tweet that I think probably is more from the amen corner here about the things that have been said. It's from Go Indigo, and it says, better transit, 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 and then a little smiley face at the end, which was a nice touch. We're going to take a call right now. I think Bob, nope, that would not be it. All right, we will go to Bob. Are you with us?
I'm here.
Oh, good to have you. I understand you've got a question. Thank you for joining the program.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
I certainly
was kind of tripping through the radio and came upon this. I listen to this channel all the time. But
well, we're glad.
The issue that I have is one that is festering in the community. It's been there forever. I'm a member of First Baptist Church North Indianapolis, and I work with the prison ministry. Mm-hmm. I chaired it for 7 years. And one of the biggest problem we have with working with individuals returning from prison is employment. And, you know, the numbers range from 3,000 to 5,000 people a year coming back to Marion County, either from jail or prison. And the attitudes of employers in the city is just, you know, no jobs are available, little to none. We'll get job training, but they can't get hired. Recidivism rates are, you know, high. The mayor himself has done more for this segment of the population than any mayors recently. He's got reentry programs that are working, are attempting to provide a service and employment and so forth. But the biggest obstacle is the business community. You know, employers are just unwilling to hire ex-offenders. We're talking small employers to the largest employers. Now, there are guys that we know that we've been in touch with who were released from prison, you know, back in the 60s and 70s and so forth, and their attitudes were a little bit more lenient, greatly more lenient. And those guys had opportunities to go on to college, to work in jobs in various plants around the city when they were thriving and so forth, have raised families, bought homes, have grandkids now, college grads in their family and all of that. But today's inmates are not having, or returning offenders, are not having that same experience. Now, if we're going to have a livable city, we have to address the issue of crime. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to look at the issue of crime, we're really going to have to look at this issue of how can we fully integrate these people who are returning from prison back into the community in such a way that will enable them to not only, through their desires to become constructive and productive citizens, but also to be able to enjoy the prosperity of the community through employment and that kind of thing.
Thank you for the question and the comment.
Sure.
Mark Miles, could we talk a little bit about whether we have made the right steps in regard to crime and criminal justice in this community, and what more we could do?
You know, I don't know that I can shine a lot of light here. I'm sure that the comments are accurate, that there are issues with respect to employer attitudes at all levels, from our smallest businesses to our bigger ones. And I know that the mayor's office and others have made it a focus. I think it's going to be even a bigger issue as one of the priorities, at least emphasized by the governor and I think last night by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, is what's called criminal justice reform, which really means more flexible sentencing, so that there will be more folks in the system who need work, who are not going to be locked up. So I think it's a big issue, and I agree with the sentiment of the caller that it's something we've got to get better at dealing with because it's a reality.
We've gotten a couple more tweets, too. I'm going to take one that says basically in Indianapolis could be an even more super city if it were smoke-free. I noticed there was an intense debate over over at the State House. Charlie Brown's got his bill in front of the General Assembly again to impose a statewide smoking ban. Do you agree, Tamarzan, that Indianapolis could be even better if it were smoke-free?
Well, I'm not a smoker, so yes, it's easy for me to agree to that. And I think I can't speak to the legislature activities right now, but I think
I'm not sure they can either.
I think there's a growing understanding that is a value-added proposition.
Mark Miles, do you agree?
I'm just not going to give Tamara any more of my cigars.
Okay. And then we got another tweet saying, what should be done to create new jobs in Indianapolis? We've kind of danced around that one a little bit. Tamara?
Well, I going back to the previous caller who was frustrated by the lack of employment opportunities for those returning from prison, you know, I think the recession caught us all off guard in terms of the severity of job loss and the corporations that had to go into it, you know, across all levels, went into a downsizing mode. So there just weren't jobs available. They were shedding jobs as opposed to adding jobs. Fortunately, I think there may be a light at the end of the tunnel, and we see corporations that are entering into the thought of a more growth mode, and that's good. And again, continuing to make this a business-friendly climate to encourage investment is what Mark and I spend time doing every day. So in educating our workforce to attract those businesses. So I think we're through the worst of it, and the future looks brighter.
Can I say something about
that? Yes, please, Dr. Bebko. Yes, please.
Tamara is exactly right, and I think it's a great point of pride for Indianapolis that we have two people like Tamara and Mark, outstanding people leading this part of the whole effort of the community to be more successful. But I think what it really boils down to in the final analysis is jobs, as they've said, as this last tweeter said, and anything we can do to encourage the creation of more jobs is what we ought to be working on. And I think the governor right now has an excellent plan, an excellent vision for how to get that done. He's already implemented a good deal of his thinking about economic growth. I think Indiana may be a favored state in this next era that we're going into because we don't have some of the problems that our neighboring states have. Illinois just passed a whopping big income tax increase. I don't think it's going to be enough to solve their financial problems. It seems to me that if you're operating a business and you were looking to be in this part of the Midwest and your choice was between Illinois and Indiana, the lack of trust of government in Illinois would be a tremendous disincentive for locating there. What we're building up in Indiana, I think, is a confidence that business leaders will have in the reliability and the stability and the prudence of state and local government. And I think that includes making some changes and reducing some of the redundant offices in local government. But I think if Mitch Daniels is able to implement his entire vision, I think we'll create a lot more jobs. And if we have enough jobs, a lot of the problems that we've been talking about will be greatly diminished, if not disappear altogether.
Mark Miles.
Yeah, I would just add, in addition to what's been said, and it's part of the governor's vision for economic growth. Everybody knows that most growth comes from small business startups and the more entrepreneurial side of our economy. And I think there's a lot of things we have to do to continue to focus on that and heighten the focus on that. And that includes much more access to early stage capital. There's a lot going on. There's been a lot of progress, particularly in the life sciences. I think BioCrossroads has had a lot to do with that. There are venture networks that are now in place that are beginning to make meaningful investments in startups, not just in the life sciences. But that really is the growth engine in any economy, and ultimately that means both wealth and jobs.
We're getting close to the end of the program here, so I'm going to ask just kind of a personal question. What do each of you find to be the best thing about living in Indianapolis? What do you enjoy the most about living here? Tamara?
The people.
The people? Just the people in your neighborhood or people?
This community is a very problem-solving community. And my example, often I spend every day working in downtown, coming together to solve problems and make Indianapolis better. I think we stand out from other cities.
Okay. Mark Miles.
So I've lived in most of my life in Indianapolis, a little time in the south of France and some time in Washington, D.C., and a lot of time in Florida. And I choose to be here now because of the quality of life we already have. It doesn't mean it can't be much better, and it will be. But I think the value proposition is the access to amenities, to jobs, to education, to all the things that we've been talking about at the level at least that we have already, compared to the lack of angst. You don't really have the commuter problems that other places have. Could be better, but a reasonable tax structure. You know, it's a fairly easy place to live in exchange for the value you get.
And Dr. Bepko, I'm afraid we've only got time for about a sentence from you. What do you like best about living in Indianapolis?
I think Tamara said it best when she said the people. I think Midwestern people, especially Indiana people, are honorable, honest, faithful, good people and measures that are not the same in other parts of the country. I think you can still shake hands with somebody in a business deal and rely on what the person says. I think that's something that's very important. It eliminates a lot of the stress.
Thank you, Dr. Bepko. You've been listening to No Limits. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us next week when we talk about education reform. Thank you for joining us today. It was a pleasure.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. Board Engineers, Matt Sosi and Josh Hamig. And intern, Savannah Rains. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, and you can listen online at WFYI.org.